Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Beat.
Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Beat, part of the Pitcher List Podcast Network. Thank you so much for joining us. My name is Chris Torres. I'll be your host today. We've got a good episode for you tonight. We have with us Jake Rill of MLB.com. We're going to be talking all things Baltimore Orioles with him. In our fantasy follow-up segment, we're going to be continuing our conversation from last week, talking about pitchers that we love. Also got some great listener questions that we'd like to discuss on today's show. So it's going to be a good one for you. But let's get right to it with the Baltimore Orioles discussion. I'm going to bring in Jake Rill of MLB.com. He's the beat writer over there for the Orioles. Jake, thank you so much for joining us tonight. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
Doing well, thanks. All right, starting off, before we get into all the questions about the Orioles this year, want to know a little bit about you. So, Jake, if you could just start out telling us a little bit about you and your path to becoming the Orioles beat writer for MLB.com, and just if you could describe your experience covering this team over the past few years.
Yeah, so I was in Maryland, about 45-ish minutes north of Baltimore. Knew this is what I always wanted to do. Majored in journalism in college, worked at a small newspaper throughout college, got the internship at MLB.com after my junior year, and they sent me to Arizona to cover the Diamondbacks, help out doing that. I interned with them again in 2016, also covering the Diamondbacks again. I stayed out there for about 6 years, latched on with MLB.com full-time, did some editing, reporting, that kind of stuff, helping out covering games, spring training, Arizona Fall League. And then right before the 23, yes, right before the 23 season, got this job covering the O's, which was kind of my dream job. It's kind of what I always wanted to do. So I moved back home and I've covered them. This is my third season now. And it's been a blast. This is a fun team to be around. It was nice kind of missing the lean years of the rebuild. Didn't have to watch some of the bad baseball that some of the other reporters had to sit through there for a few years. I kind of hopped on right as they were hitting the top. So it's been really fun covering a team that's, you know, been in the thick of the playoff hunt these last few years and seems really well positioned to compete again this year.
Well, you're doing a great job of them. So I hope you keep it up. Our first question is Adley Rutschman. He's an Orioles player that many fantasy gamers have questions about, given, you know, the noticeable difference in his first and second half splits. Like, for context, Rutschman's OPS dropped from 780 in the first half to 585 in the second half. So what's your opinion on his downturn in performance, and what are you expecting from him this season?
Yeah, I think the first thing people might think, you know, when you see that big of a drop-off like that from first half to second half is whether he was playing injured, and especially being a catcher, just the most grueling position. But he said that, you know, he wasn't hurt, just nothing more than just being banged up as a catcher normally would. And Mike Elias kind of said the same thing, that there was no injury to an extent that he would call an injury. It was just the normal wear and tear and grind of a season. And I think more than anything, it was just every young player is going to go through stretches like that. And, you know, if you have a 15-year career, there's going to be periods of time where you are in a slump. And Adley had never really gone through anything like that for too prolonged of a stretch. So I think it was kind of natural for something like that to be coming. And it was just kind of unfortunate for the Orioles that it happened at a time when a lot of guys were slumping, a lot of guys were struggling, and the offensive struggles kind of being their undoing throughout the second half and then with that quick postseason appearance. But Adley's extremely motivated. It's impressive the shape he came into in camp. It's noticeable. And a lot of times this time of year, it feels like pitchers are ahead of hitters, but what I've noticed from Adley's swing is that his timing's already down. His swing already looks really good. He's been out there in live BP the last couple days, and he's hit a couple homers off his teammates, which is always an encouraging sign, especially when you see a lot of hitters out there who are striking out and who maybe don't have their timing down. So I think it's just kind of a sign of things to come. Hitting coach Cody Ashe said that, you know, he kind of told fans the other day that he thinks the second half last year from Adley Rutschman is not going to be a precursor. He expects to see he does not think that's going to be the future of Adley Rutschman. He sees him more so getting back to that form that he showed early in his career. And, you know, I think he's just extremely poised for a much better showing in 2025.
That's good.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Jake, I am intrigued always by bullpens, everybody's bullpen. And the Orioles have an interesting one with Felix Bautista coming back from Tommy John surgery last year. General Manager Mike Elias, who you just referred to a couple minutes ago, has said that they're going to take it easy with him kind of coming back, and that perhaps he might not pitch back-to-back days. If that would be the case, who do you think is most primed to get those save opportunities when Bautista can't go?
Yeah, I think their best case scenario is that they don't have to use anybody else. Felix has looked good in his early bullpen sessions, but he hasn't faced hitters yet, so they're going to kind of ease him into that. He's not going to pitch in Grapefruit League games until much later in the spring, so they're definitely being cautious. They're being careful. They want to make sure he's okay and 100%. There's still a very strong chance he's going to be on the opening day roster. I think it would require some form of setback for him not to be on the opening day roster. But it would not surprise me if once we get to the season, they shy away from using him in back-to-back games. They don't want to push him too hard. It also wouldn't be the most surprising thing if they tried to find some maybe soft landing spots for him, just because this is a guy who hasn't pitched in big league games since 2023. It would be a little bit ridiculous to think maybe he's going to go right back to that form just because he has had such a long layoff. Maybe he does. Maybe the fastball looks live. Maybe the splitter's still nasty. And if that's the case, the Orioles will be very happy and they'll take it. But if it's not the case, I think Sir Anthony Dominguez is a guy who you can see in a lot of save situations. He was the guy they got from the Phillies at the trade deadline last year. He kind of became the de facto closer down the stretch just because Craig Kimbrell struggled so much, and then he got DFA'd, and then he had Sir Anthony to pick up some saves. So I think on days when Felix is not available, it would not surprise me if that goes to Sir Anthony, especially because they have guys like Yennier Cano and Cionel Perez who can still set up either of them. So And Cano's much more valuable in that seventh, eighth role. He's not really a closer, and he's kind of said it himself that he's not a closer. He's a setup guy. He likes to be in the seventh or eighth inning and turn the ball over to a closer for the ninth. So I think Sir Anthony's a very valuable piece because he could pick up some of those early save opportunities as Felix gets eased back into action. But obviously it's quite possible that Felix comes back, looks like himself, and gets a lot of save opportunities early. And I would fully expect by later in the season for Felix to be getting all the save opportunities and probably getting back to that form that made him so good in 2023.
All right. My late round Andrew Kittredge shares are sad with that answer. I was hoping that I was going to get some early saves there, but it sounds like Dominguez is probably the guy carrying over from the end of last year. All right. Let's see. Pulling up our outline here. I'm sorry. I lost it for a moment. All right, so I'm going to ask you here about Grayson Rodriguez, another player that a lot of fantasy gamers are curious about. Going around pick 100 in these early drafts, I know he finished the season with the lat injury, and a lot of people are wondering, is he fully healthy? And is this the year that he finally puts it all together? So what are you number one, is he healthy coming into this year, in your opinion? And what are you expecting from him in 2025?
Yeah, he's fully healthy. When we first met with him at the beginning of the spring, actually it was a couple weeks even before spring training, it was at the Birdland Caravan kind of fan fest type things they do. He said that when he went home for the offseason right after the playoff exit, he got fully cleared about a week after that. So he was able to have a completely full offseason, normal ramp up. He was able to do all his typical workouts. So he looks to be in good shape. He looks sharp in his bullpen sessions out here so far. And like you said, I mean, this is a guy with all the potential in the world. I mean, you look at the starting pitching mix, and I think he's kind of the clear-cut guy who could become an ace in the future. You see guys like Eflin and Morton. I mean, those are good veteran guys to have, guys who will eat innings, but I don't really see any of them rising to the level of ace to kind of pass that point in their careers. I mean, Grayson's the guy, former first-round pick, former top 100 prospect. I think last year his numbers would have looked even more impressive if he didn't have those two stints on the IL. Those really kind of hurt him and impacted him. And he's always had a start or two, it feels like, that's been an outlier too, that kind of inflate his numbers. He hasn't really learned how to turn those bad starts and the nights where he just doesn't have it. He hasn't been able to find a way to grind through some innings and kind of prevent the big blowups. And that's something he's really is focused on too. He knows that he needs to avoid that. And that's something that Corbin Burns did very well last year. And he even said that he picked up from Corbin Burns, and he wants to be more aggressive like Burns was. He doesn't want to nibble around the edges. He wants to be aggressive and attack the zone. And I think it was very beneficial for him to be around a guy like Corbin Burns last year so he could see what an ace is like. And now it's going to allow Grayson to maybe take that next step. And it would not surprise me if by this point next year we're looking at a completely different outlook for Grayson Rodriguez and him being an already proven number one starter, because I think he could take that big of a step this year.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, if that's the case, he is certainly a value in drafts at this point. But we will be talking more Orioles here. Just have to take a quick commercial break. All right. We are back with Jake Rill of MLB.com. Dave, you got a question for Jake about Coby Mayo.
Yeah. It's expected that he might be a huge contributor this season. Can you give us a prediction on maybe over under 200 at bats for him in 2025?
Yeah, I think 200 is probably a fair line, just because it certainly does not look like he's going to be on the opening day roster. It would probably take an injury for that to happen. Even if he goes out there and hits the cover off the ball, I'm not sure what he would need to do to unseat somebody who already is on the roster, just because there's a lot of proven guys out there. There's a lot of valuable players. And also there's some uncertainty about where Kobe's defense position is going to be long-term. I'm not sure that's going to be third base, a position where he has struggled a little bit. It has been a work in progress, working with the arm slots. Elias has said he thinks he's furthest along at first base, but you have Mountcastle and O'Hearn there. You already have two first basemen. They don't really need to add Mayo to that mix. They like leaving the DH slot open so they can rotate guys through. So it doesn't seem like a full-time DH thing's in his future. But, I mean, there's no question that he has a lot of potential. The 4-for-41 in 17 games last year, I don't think that's going to be what it looks like in the future. It's just kind of been the trend for Orioles prospects to come up and struggle at first and then get sent back down and make adjustments. And they're not 100% sure why that is or what they can do to prevent that. A lot of times it's just young guys needing a little taste of it to know what to expect and being able to have that impact their offseason work. So I think Kobe's definitely going to improve when he gets that next shot. The big question is just when is he going to get that next shot, especially because there's just so many infielders in this mix. So it could take an injury before he gets called up. But I think once he gets up there again, he's going to be there to stay, just because the AAA numbers are so impressive and the talent is there. So if I had to predict, I'd say a little over 200 at-bats, I think, is probably fair, just because it's going to take him a little bit to get back up. But if he goes down there and tears it up in AAA again for the first month, first 6 weeks, the Orioles are just going to have to do something. They're going to have to find a way to get him on the roster, especially when he could be such a big piece for their lineup. So I think a little bit over 200, but I think the potential is also there for it to be a good bit over 200 if he can just get up quickly, which will obviously be dictated by the health of the rest of the guys.
I just want to follow up with a more general question that includes Mayo, but is broader than that. The Orioles seem to have these really good prospects. Like, and this has been, I think, over the past few years, they've had several of these guys that they like just haven't fully committed to. They've had like a surplus of these young position players that show potential, but then they'll give them a little bit of taste of the majors and then maybe send them back down. I guess my question is, if you have any insight into why the Orioles don't make a move, right? Like, move some of these guys to free up space, either to get assets in return or just open up playing time so that, you know, they could, and also address some of their needs.
Yeah, I think Mike Elias, if you brought that up to him, I think his argument would be that he has moved a few guys. I mean, there have been guys like Joey Ortiz, who was in the Burns trade, and they moved Norby and Stowers for Trevor Rogers last year. Now, obviously, that one's not one that looks like panned out too well so far. There's still time. I mean, once he gets back down the AAA and works on some stuff, maybe he still could be an impact piece for this rotation. But they have moved a few prospects, maybe not the top level guys, and it still feels, I mean, this farm system was so deep that it still feels like there's tons of position players even after moving a few. I definitely see the point of maybe they should have moved somebody else. I mean, like I said before, first base is very crowded. If you want to get Coby Mayo opportunities, you can't do that with Mountcastle and O'Hearn there. It would not surprise me if there were discussions about for big league player type trades this offseason. Maybe just one didn't materialize. It has been tough to get guys at bats. I think Heston Hurstad's a big example of that. I mean, he's shown what he could do a few times during the past two seasons, but there just weren't at bats for him. I think that's been cleared up a little bit now that Anthony Santander is gone. I think Hurstad's going to get a lot more of an opportunity this year. I think once some of these guys start to hit free agency, it would not surprise me if you start to see guys cycle through. Cedric Mullins is going to be a free agent after this season. Maybe he's a guy who doesn't come back. Maybe Kowser becomes your center fielder at that point for the long term. That can open up some spots. So it would not surprise me if there's some rotation there as guys kind of hit free agency and maybe they don't bring guys back. But there's also still the trade deadline coming up later in the year. I know obviously the prices will rise, but Elias has the pieces where if he still wants to add an ace to this rotation, which could still be quite a big need by the time July rolls around, then he has the pieces to do something then and, you know, kind of bolster them for the second half.
Speaking of pieces, perhaps the most well-known and most hyped prospect of all of the Orioles guys is Jackson Holliday. And Holliday last year showed some noticeable improvements in the second half that might be having him fly under the radar a little bit for fantasy purposes this year. In 172 second half plate appearances, Holliday had 5 home runs, which was backed by a 46% hard hit rate, which is quite high. He also chipped in 4 stolen bases during that time. Jake, do you think he's ready to break out this year, or do you think he's going to need some more time to develop before it all kind of coalesces together for him?
No, I definitely think he's ready to break out. He had another just huge offseason for him. I mean, last year he showed up and he looked even more, he looked jacked, and then this year he shows up and looks even more jacked. So it's clear that he had a very good offseason on putting on muscle, which is only going to help his power. And I know you look at the numbers from last year and they don't look good on paper, but there was also a 2-week stretch there right after the trade deadline where he showed what he could do. He was hitting everything out. He hit that first home run for a grand slam, went on a tear in Cleveland right after that. So, I mean, the potential's there, and everybody knows the tools. Everybody knows the pedigree, knows the baseball runs in his family. The talent is there. I think last year was just so beneficial for him to see big league pitching for himself. Obviously, he watched a lot of it from the sidelines and from the stands watching his dad. But actually standing in the box was so different, and I think it's going to help him big time. And second base is really his job to win because Jorge Mateo is going to start the year on the injured list, and he's really maybe the only guy who was blocking him from trying to get that second base job because Jordan Westberg is going to play a lot of third. Ramon Arias is going to play second and third, but he's probably not an everyday player. He's more of a defensive guy, a guy who can spot start, a guy who can bring in here and there. So, I mean, this job is Holliday's to win, and the Orioles would love for him to go out and do it this spring and show that he can play almost every day or maybe every day if he can handle left-handed pitching. So I think he set up very well. He had a great spring training last year. People may not remember because he didn't end up making the opening day roster after Mike Elias had said he had a shot. But he did just about everything he could to make the opening day roster last year. He put up big numbers. He learned second base on the fly, a position he really didn't even know that well. So I think he's only going to build upon what he did last year, and I think he's going to take a huge step forward this year, and I think he's going to be the second baseman for quite some time after opening day.
I love it. I love it. I mean, just everything, the picture that I saw the other day, dude got jacked. It just everything seems to be coming together. I think he's ready for a huge breakout. If you take anything away from this podcast, if you're listening, just go write this down. Make sure in your upcoming drafts, you target Jackson Holliday because he is the classic post-hype breakout, right? Going at pick 232 right now, a guy that people are just kind of like, he didn't look that great last year. They've kind of soured on him. Remember the pedigree. Remember what we were thinking of this guy last year. Has some struggles to be expected. Showed in the second half the kind of player that he is, and I'm with Jake. I think we see it all come together this year. All right, let's talk about some of the rotation depth for the Orioles, and I had included Chase McDermott in this question, and I saw today that he's dealing with an injury himself, so I'll take him out of this for now, but they've got a couple other young pieces down there that are kind of serving as their SP6 and 7 right now, which that would be Cade Povich and Brandon Young. So wanted to get your opinion, Jake. Who do you think gets the first shot if there is an opening in the rotation? And out of those two, who do you think has the most upside?
Well, I definitely think it's Cade Povich who gets the first shot. I mean, he got almost 80 innings in the big leagues last year, got that first taste, had a couple stints, showed some success. He was much better the second time he got caught up than the first, had a couple really good starts to kind of flash his potential. I also think it's big that he's left-handed. The Orioles don't really have a left-handed starter now that John Means is gone and Trevor Rogers is dealing with a knee injury. Right now, their projected rotation is five right-handers, and even the first guy out, who's probably Albert Suarez, who's going to be shifted to the bullpen, he's also a righty. So if the Orioles want to have a lefty, then Cade Povich is their guy because there's not really any other options. But I think they're also fine going in with the righties to start the season. But I think Povich is in a good spot to get a call up soon, shortly into the season. He's looked really good out here. I was talking to him the other day, and he knows that command is the big thing he needs to work on. He went home to Nebraska and set up one of those things with the strings, the targets, and was working on hitting the nine quadrants, like, or not quadrants, not hitting the nine zones of the strike zone. Just trying to better pinpoint his pitches because the stuff is there. There is, he can get swing and miss, but sometimes he's just all over the place and can't find the strike zone. And when that happens, it seems like he can't get back into it. So I think he's in a good spot going into the season. Brandon Young's interesting just because we haven't seen him in the big leagues yet, but he had a really good showing last year. I mean, he was named the organization's minor league pitcher of the year for a reason. He has an interesting arsenal. The fastball looks pretty good. He's been working a lot on the off-speed stuff, trying to sharpen that slider and make it more of an out pitch. Mike Elias name-dropped him last August out of nowhere when we were just talking about the starting pitching depth and said that he was on the radar screen is how he put it. And, you know, Brandon Young really hadn't even been brought up by anybody at that point. So he's definitely on the front office's radar, and I think they definitely want to get him a shot in the big leagues. I almost think, though, both of these guys, maybe their ceiling is back-end starter, especially Young. I could kind of see him maybe moving to the bullpen at some point. I don't know if it happens this year, but in the future. I think McDermott's kind of in that conversation as well, just because I'm not sure he has the ceiling either to be a long-term starter. Haven't seen him in the big leagues much either, only four innings last year and one spot start. He also has struggled staying healthy, like you've said, and he's a couple weeks behind down here, so he's not going to be even in the conversation for the opening day roster. Not that I don't think he was probably going to make it anyways, but I think all these guys have interesting things about them. I think they all have upsides in certain ways. I've always been a little bit higher on Povich, I think, than some of the others, just because I think he has it, and especially just I like the arm angles from the left-handed slot, and I think he's just a little bit different than what they have. So I think he's going to get back up to the big leagues and relatively soon, and I think he'll be able to have some success there now that he's had an offseason to know what better to expect from big league hitting and was able to work on some stuff, and I think he's in a good position to maybe put up better numbers once he gets back up there.
A big player in the fantasy community is Gunnar Henderson. He's one of the first players taken. What's been your experience covering him? And can you give us any insight into the personality of this Orioles budding star?
Yeah, it's always fun to watch a 9-WAR player go out there every day just because he does everything so well. It's a blast covering him. I really think there's almost two sides of Gunnar, just because off the field, he's this, you know, goofy guy. He's building Legos. He's palling around with Colton Cowser. You know, he's showing off the Scooby-Doo bat, doing the impersonation on the Home Run Derby. But when he steps onto the field, I mean, this guy plays harder than just about anybody in the league. He always plays with his hair on fire. He's in the 2023 playoffs. I remember he slid into home plate and got that black, gave himself a black eye because he was diving into home plate so hard. He's just so talented, and he just keeps getting better. I think his defense is in a good spot to take a step forward this year because he has the range, and he's shown that. But the errors were way up last year just because sometimes he is almost too aggressive. That's kind of just his personality of playing like that, that he hasn't learned quite yet, that sometimes he just needs to pocket the ball and not be too ultra aggressive and try to make a play that just isn't there. So I think that's an area he's going to take a big step forward. And then offensively, he's kind of shown his game at this point. He has the power. He can hit for average. He can do just about everything. He runs the base as well. He's just also a very humble guy. I think you can see it in his interviews, and anybody you talk to from back in Alabama where he's from or anybody in the organization is just always high on the character of this guy. And I think he's the perfect guy for them to build around, and as they have been building around in recent years. And I think he's just going to – I'm not sure how much more he can build on it because he's already so good, but I think he's at least going to do what he did last year again this year.
Very cool. It's nice to hear that, you know, these guys that are superstars on the field are also decent guys off the field, too. And it sounds like Gunnar is definitely that. All right. We got one last question for you that we're going to get you out of here on. little different. We are going to ask you to rank the following Baltimore-themed people slash things. All right. So we've got Cal Ripken, Crab Cakes, Camden Yards, Lamar Jackson, the Inner Harbor, and lastly, Brady Anderson's random as hell 50 home run season in I believe 1996, I believe that was. So give us your rank.
All right. Well, this one might not be popular in Baltimore, but I'm going to put Lamar Jackson 6 just because I'm not a Ravens fan. I'm a Commanders fan. So if you'd give me Jaden Daniels, he would be much higher on the list.
Okay.
Nothing against Lamar. Obviously very good, but I'm just going to put him at 6 since these are my personal rankings.
We'll edit that out, Jake. Okay. Just in case anybody from Baltimore is listening. But all right. So Jaden Daniels, 6.
At 5, I will put – I'll put Brady's 50 home run season just because it's not the franchise record. Chris Davis broke that. I was pretty young when it happened, the Brady season, so I don't have too great of a memory of it. So I'll put that at 5. I'll put the Inner Harbor 4. Nothing against the Inner Harbor. It's a great, a lot of good restaurants down there, great views, but the rest of these things are kind of stacked on this list. So Inner Harbor has to go 4.
Okay.
I'll put Crab Cakes 3. I'm biased because, you know, I grew up with Maryland crab cakes and I've kind of learned to not order them anywhere else. I had one in Boston a couple years ago that was not great. And I kind of realized I should stick to only getting Maryland crab cakes because I started with the best there. Last two are tough. Cal and Camden Yards, obviously two pinnacles of Orioles baseball here. I'll put Cal 2 and Camden Yards 1. And the only reason is that I grew up at Camden Yards. I've been to so many games there. It was my fifth grade field trip there that kind of got me into this career, kind of touring the press box and seeing, I was like, oh, I didn't even know this really was a job. Like, I didn't know I could make this something. So without that, I probably wouldn't be here. So I will put Camden Yards 1, just barely over Cal.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Tell me what it like. That's so cool to hear that, like, you grew up in the area, you grew up a fan. You had identified this early on as something that you wanted to do, to be a writer for them. What was that first day like when you walked into the press box? You're working for MLB.com as the Orioles beat writer. Like, just take me through that, like, just emotionally, and what that experience was like for you.
Yeah, it was definitely crazy. So when I was an intern at that newspaper, when I was actually in high school still. It was my senior year of high school, second semester. They let me go down and, like, interview some players and stuff. So that was, like, my moment where I was so nervous and, like, it was just crazy. And the first game I ever sat in a press box was when Josh Hamilton hit 4 home runs for the Rangers.
Oh, wow.
I was like,
that's quite a game to go to. Yeah.
Yeah. It was crazy. So by the time I got this job for MLB.com, like, the nerves were gone. I've been around baseball for the last 6 years. I've talked to a lot of big league guys. So, you know, it felt like kind of just a continuation, more of the same what I'd been doing. But obviously being the Orioles beat writer is different than being just, you know, a general assignment writer. You know, right. I did take pride kind of in, like, this being what I wanted to do and accomplishing it. So it was more just a sense of that, just like, this was what I'd spent the last 10, 15 years grinding for, and just, you know, doing any job possible and doing any role possible in this field to get here. So it was just more of that. Just felt good to, you know, be at this point in my career finally.
Yeah. That's a really cool story. Like, you had a dream, you had a goal, you worked hard, you persevered. I'm sure there were, you know, it took a lot of grinding to get to that point and to finally get there. That's just really cool. And, you're doing a great job, and we appreciate you taking a few minutes here to talk to us. And, you know, I know you'll be in spring training here for the next month, which might be a long haul, but I am a little bit jealous. I am jealous that you're in the warm weather there. But thank you again, Jake. If you could just tell our listeners where they could find your work and where they can find you on social media.
Yeah, I'm on on X, I'm Jake D. Rill. I'm also over on Blue Sky. And then you can read all of my stories on Orioles.com.
All right. Very good. So we will say goodbye to Jake. We are going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be back with more fantasy baseball talk. All right. We are back. You just heard our interview with Jake Rill of MLB.com. We are now going to spend a few minutes kind of Focusing on the Orioles here and looking at them more from a fantasy perspective. So my first question to you guys, actually my only question in regards to this, is which Baltimore Oriole player are you most interested in at cost right now? And I'm going to start with you, Mike.
Well, you know, after talking to Jake, one thing first before we even talk about that, he talked about living your dreams. My dream was to be on a podcast with you two numbskulls. And yeah, I'm living that on a weekly basis, baby.
Yeah, be jealous. Dream, yeah, you got to aim higher, bro. That's not a dream.
Well, and then I got to share a room with a guy who tapes his mouth shut and eats bone broth, and you know,
I feel genuinely
garlic in his hair and all this other stuff. No, just kidding. No, it is awesome, guys. It's awesome doing this with you every week. I really look forward to it. what I was going to say though about the Orioles was that hearing Jake talk about Jackson Holliday was pretty exciting stuff for me. You know, he's a guy that I think is going lower than what a lot of us probably thought he was going last year. He went very high in a lot of drafts that I was in. Right now, his current ADP since February 1st is about 221, the high water mark of 142, low of 311. Talking about a second baseman that maybe can do it all. I don't know what the batting average will look like, but you guys know that I'm a sucker for these guys with double-digit home runs and double-digit steals. And based on what he did in the second half last year, and I know we can't just simply extrapolate it, but if we did that with Holliday, you got a really good second baseman. Where he's going, a lot of people will already have their second baseman, and Holliday could end up being that middle infield guy for them. You know, if you go and get a guy like Luis Garcia and then you got Jackson Holliday too, you're way ahead of it. Now, that might be a little excessive for second base. I recognize that. But where Holliday's going right now is a really sweet spot, I think.
Yeah, I mean, you're getting him in like an area where you're taking your middle infielder, right? So you're not – there's not as much pressure on him. Like, yeah, I understand there is certainly downside risk, right? Maybe we see the first half Jackson Holliday show up again, and he just needs more seasoning in the minors. But there's also an upside case where he just carries over what he did in the second half, which was be a legitimate power speed threat. And, you know, yeah, we'd like to hit him, see him hit higher in the order. But like, if you're giving us that combination of power and speed, that makes you super valuable for fantasy, obviously. And I think people just kind of, we quickly just sour on these guys that don't come up and perform right away. You know, like you said, he was going higher last year, and I think a lot of people were excited to draft him and were disappointed. And I'm like, whatever, Jackson Holliday, you know, not just kind of riding him off. And I think that's a mistake. I think I'm with you, man. I think he's probably the player I'm most interested in. I talked about Jordan Westberg last week too, as a guy that
he's pretty good too. Yeah.
He's really good. He's a guy that, you know, I think I was really surprised at how hard he hits the ball and just, you know, really all around solid player. You add in second base, third base eligibility. I just really like his profile as well. So definitely in on Holliday at cost, in at Westberg at cost. He's going around pick, I think, 80 to 90 on NFBC. And across Yahoo's in that same range as well for Jordan Westberg. Dave, who do you got? Who is your player that on the Orioles that you're most interested in at cost?
Well, I really like the guys you guys talked about, Westberg, and I like Holliday after hearing from Jake. And in the past, we kind of talked about, you know, Ryan Mountcastle. We talked about a lot of these guys, but what I really liked hearing was that Sir Anthony Dominguez might be getting some early season saves. And I know Felix Bautista is supposed to be their guy, but he hasn't pitched in what, almost two, a year and a half almost, since the end of August 2023. We don't know what kind of pitcher we're going to get. I know they slow played him back last season in order to make sure that he was ready for this season. But he's already being delayed a bit in the sense that they're going to stretch him out, ease him back in. What if he's not that guy? What if there's something else? And what if he does struggle? And what if Sir Anthony Dominguez comes in and actually handles the closing role at the beginning quite well, to the point where maybe he gets 15 to 20% of the saves, or he gets the second of the back-to-back saves. At pick 613, you can do a lot worse with getting possibly, what do you think, 10 saves this year out of him? For everything that people were, like, you were talking about Andrew Kittredge. You were probably expecting the same out of that. Mm-hmm. So I like him at value for at least the beginning of the season as your last pick for 5 to 10 saves. And those things can be valuable heading to the end of the year. So
okay,
he's my on-the-cuff pick after hearing from Jake.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, he's someone, you know, you're not drafting in a regular fab league. He's like a draft and hold play. Someone to keep an eye on the waiver wire. If we do see that Bautista is getting off to a slower start, or they really are just kind of easing him in. Yeah, that's a good piece of information from Jake, because I assumed it would be Kittredge given that they gave him the contract. Yeah, it would make sense for Dominguez too, because he was the guy at the end of the year. So, all right. One last question that I have for you on the Orioles, because I think this is a kind of a divisive player. I've heard people on both sides of this argument. Grayson Rodriguez, and I'm going to give you like 30 seconds to give me your case. Mike, are you in or out?
I am not in, and I just don't have a great feel for what he is. You know, I think we're expecting him to be putting up these ace-like numbers, and I just don't see it when I look at the profile, you know. He had a good year last year. He's never thrown more than 122 innings, which concerns me with where he's going. I mean, if you're talking about 120 innings of Jacob DeGrom, I'll shut up, you know, and sit back down. But you're talking about a guy who had 122, then 116 last year. He doesn't tend to go real deep into games. You know, he's he had 23 starts in 23, 20 last year. The K rate's there. That looks pretty good. The ratios are not great for what you're paying for at that point. Now, I do understand that with the guy like him, you are paying for a little bit of helium here, right? He's got a sexy name. He looks really great when he's out there. Is he ready to take that next step? I don't know. And there's other guys around him that I think I feel more comfortable taking than Grayson.
Okay, so you're out on Grayson, Dave. I like your opinion too, especially in light of the injury that he dealt with at the end of last year. Where are you at with Grayson Rodriguez?
Yeah, I mean, from all that we've heard, including from Jake, he's healthy now. He's going to be healthy, and he looks pretty good in camp. But I'm still worried based off his injury history. He's had these issues before, and he's had it in the minor leagues, and he's missed some time then. It was like the injury that he suffered in 2024 that cost him the rest of the season. It was more like he knew how to deal with it. But I do worry when pitchers know how to deal with something they've had before as well, because it's a recurring issue. I'm out on him as well. I know he's around a top 100 pick, but I prefer to draft someone that I don't have these potential injury concerns about. And so for that reason, I'm out.
All right. We're going to move on from Orioles talk and maybe include some Orioles in the segment. But we had a segment last week where we discussed hitters that we love. And it was our Valentine's Day themed episode. And we planned to talk about pitchers as well, but just never got to it, ran out of time. So we are going to continue that today. And listen, here's just some unsolicited advice about Valentine's Day. You don't have to just give your partner a gift or flowers or whatever on Valentine's Day. Make Valentine's Day every day, right? Surprise them with something on a random day. So just like, you know, we could talk about hitters that we love on Valentine's Day, we could talk about pitchers that we love today. Doesn't matter. All right. Mike, give me a starting pitcher. Actually, you know what? Give me both. Give me your starter and your reliever that you love coming into this season.
Well, after I clean the throw up out of my mouth for what you just said, I'll go ahead and give you my
answer. All right, man. Listen, you know, you'll get some good points if you listen to me, but just
hey, whatever. I've been married 25 years, pal.
17 or 16 here. So, you know,
that's awesome. That's great. That is. Congratulations. Well, Ingrid is Ingrid is a saint.
She truly is.
Special level of heaven for her. Okay. Nobody wants to hear me proselytize. Let's talk about pitchers. A guy that I have been looking at pretty deeply this winter, especially after what happened to him in the second half, is Yusei Kikuchi. And he's a pretty divisive guy for a lot of fantasy players, it seems like. His current ADP since the 1st of February is 169 right now, minimum of 127, max of 228, selected in 92 teams, or in 92 drafts, I should say. But what really interests me about Kikuchi is that going to Houston is a great panacea for people who are ailing as pitchers. And they really kind of used him in a little bit different way and got him thinking about his pitch mix a little bit differently. If you go on to, you know, Savant and take a look at what he did in the second half last year, you can break down his pitch percentages by month. He was throwing 50% four-seam fastballs in May. And by the time the Astros were done with him, he had cut that by about 15% down in September. But more importantly, what he had done was he had started using his slider more. He essentially doubled his slider usage from April of 24 to September of 24. And he also started using his changeup again a little bit more, or I'm sorry, his curveball a little bit more towards the end of the season, but not as much as what he had been. So really what happened was he started using the slider more and the four-seamer less, and he remained pretty consistent with the changeup, and the curveball saw a little bit of an uptick after kind of a decrease in July and September. But because he made those changes, he really is somebody that I'm looking at as a guy that, you know, you might be getting in that range right there. You might be getting as your third or fourth starter, depending on how you attack starting pitching. I don't want to get attacked for that by other people that are listening, but, you know,
attack him.
Kikuchi is the type of guy that I think really could pay off some dividends for you if he's able to hold on to those changes that he made while he was down in Houston. He looked like a totally different guy when he was in Houston. I think you can expect if he throws 175 innings again, he's going to have 200 strikeouts again. And I wonder how many fantasy players are aware that he did that last season. I'll bet you the vast majority are not. And then the relief pitcher that I really like is a guy that the three of us have talked quite a bit about over the course of time, and that's Jeff Hoffman. I really like the fact that he's going to be the closer in Toronto. The stat cast is full of bright, you know, blood red that you like to see. We know what his stuff is like. We know what he's done the last two seasons when he was in Philadelphia. I know that some people are worried about the physicals and the different things that went on, but I think it's really important to point out still too, you know, the Braves were going to sign him, and then there was somebody else that was at the Baltimore that was looking to sign him as a starter, and then they backed off of that, but they still both offered him contracts, just wasn't as lucrative as what he was going to get as being a starter. So if they didn't think he was healthy at all, they wouldn't still be interested in signing the guy. I think he's healthy. He said that he's feeling fine. He came into camp. He's not had any setbacks or any reasons for alarm. Where he's going right now in drafts, people, you're getting a little bit of a discount right now. His ADP right now is about 153. So I think he's a great closer too if you've already taken somebody early on like I plan to do in most drafts.
I think he's going a little bit earlier than that. Just double. Are you referencing DCs or just in general?
Well, in DCs, he's going to go higher, right? So in DCs, he's probably more like 106. But in regular, you know, human being drafts, like I'm not your caliber of a player. He's going quite a bit later than that, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if I could be considered a regular human being. So I will.
Yeah, good point, valid.
Yeah, yeah. So I think you're right on there. All right. So Mike loves Yusei Kikuchi, and Jeff Hoffman, Dave. Who do you love?
I love Logan Webb. I know he had a down season last year, but first of all, he's a workhorse. He's gone back-to-back 200-plus inning seasons, which should be good. Hopefully it's not. But he should be there for you. His ERA went up a bit, despite what some might consider a bad season. His xERA was bad, but his xFIP of 3.28 and his Sierra of 3.61, still pretty good. Also a low walk rate, which is very, very good. And Eno Saris is in his new stuff plus projections, 104 stuff plus, 106 location plus, 109 pitching plus. And what I like about him too, he's got a 98% health grade from Jeff Zimmerman's portion of it. The best part though, I think, is that he's introducing what we think is going to be a new cutter. And he started it back in September and he's going to try and work it in for 2025. And he had some pretty good success with it. So right now he's around pick 100 or so. He's around the 40-something pitcher off the board. He's someone that was up draft boards in years past. He had a poor season, so people start to drop him down. But he's young enough where he can bounce back. I would be happy with him as even as high as my my SP2. So I'm in on Logan Webb this year.
All right, very good. Who do you got for a reliever that you love?
My reliever this year, who I adore, is David Bednar. And the reason is I saw a good article about him on Rum Bunter. I believe that's a Pirates site. And they sold him on me. They had four reasons why he was going to improve this year and bounce back. The stuff plus on all of his pitches was actually higher in 2024. And his location plus was a bit off, but that's because of the bad season. He started unhealthy to begin the season. He had a lat issue. And those can be tricky, and they take a lot to overcome. But then he had an oblique injury, and he came back in just 3 weeks. And typically, obliques take at least twice as much. So he rushed back. Another reason was that Trevor May pointed out that Bednar was actually tipping his pitches. Mm-hmm. He held his glove. He said that he held his glove during his motion, and it gave away exactly what his pitches were going to be. So for those three reasons, plus the fact of his track record with minimal competition, at ADP 142, I'm all in on him. And I think you could confidently take him even as your RP2. In even a worst case scenario, I would try as my RP1, but I would also draft someone almost immediately after.
Got it. Okay. Mike. Yeah. I know you're a Bednar guy too, right?
Yes.
Who would be the guy? Because I haven't heard anybody talk about like anybody else in the Pittsburgh bullpen, which is why I'm also in on Bednar, because who's going to take the job right now? But if there was somebody, is there anybody we should be paying attention to that could be a potential threat to the job in the event that Bednar does struggle again this year?
Well, that's a really great question, and I wish I had a crystal ball to be able to tell you. I mean, there are two top setup men from the last couple of seasons for Colin Holderman and Carmen Mladzinski. Holderman is a slightly better option than Mladzinski. Caleb Ferguson is also in that bullpen now that they got away from Houston earlier in January. He's got some experience with saves. But Dennis Santana is another guy who had a fantastic season for them last year as a 28-year-old retread. And so it could be any one of those types of guys. I don't know. You know, it's hard to say. I think Bednar is clearly their top choice. They really want him to take that job. I don't really see anybody else there that has the stuff that Bednar does to be able to get, you know, guys out long term. And we know that, you know, people sometimes will ask me, oh, you know, what about the minor leagues? Well, you know, most teams don't really work on having minor league closers, you know, like they don't have a lot of depth at the position. And when you're in AAA, they just kind of use AAA guys. So, you know, they got like Chase Shugart and Peter Strzelecki there. I don't think that any of those guys are closing material at this time. They would have a little bit of a problem. I would guess that they would probably do a committee approach. I would look for Holderman and Santana probably to be part of that committee, maybe with a little bit of Caleb Ferguson sprinkled in.
All right. Speaking of the Pirates, we got some breaking news. The Pittsburgh Pirates made a move. They signed Andrew Heaney as their kind of, I guess, SP4. He's better than Bailey Falter. I don't know who else. Maybe it's Bubba Chandler in that last spot, and then Heaney as the SP4, but an interesting move. I think he was someone I was drafting early on who thought would sign earlier and was hoping he would go to a place like San Francisco, but Pittsburgh is not so bad. So Andrew Heaney, a late option right now. Like probably you could just get, you know, he's not the 12 team, a guy you're taking in a 12 teamer, but at the end of a 15 teamer, not the worst pick. All right. So let me give you the pitchers that I love. I'm going to make this quick. One of these guys, I think everybody's talking about. So I'm not going to like, I think this is the breakout for everybody, but I really have no holes to poke in the argument against this guy breaking out. So I'm just going to get aboard the train. You know, who cares? Because I think it's right. And that's Spencer Schwellenbach.
Mm-hmm.
Everything that guy showed last year was legit. I mean, all of the stats that I look at, K minus walk, Sierra, CSW, swinging strike, stuff plus, literally ground ball percentage, everything lined up to this guy is going to be an ace. And I just think this year, assuming health, obviously, he's just going to continue that ascension. And I think we'll see as like the big drafts come around and, you know, how much he gets pushed up. But I just think he's still going into place and like, you know, round five or six, I'm totally comfortable with him as my SP2. And I think he's definitely, I feel very confident that he is going to pay that off. I was reading a little bit about him too. And he was a guy who I think was originally a shortstop, a very athletic guy, and kind of reminded me of like a Jacob DeGrom. Similar to DeGrom's story, where DeGrom kind of got started as a pitcher later, started out more as a hitter. And, you know, I don't know if Schwellenbach quite has that ceiling, but man, like everything just looks good. He's got the velo as well. Like I'm all in on Spencer Schwellenbach, as I know many others are. And I'll give you another Spencer that I love. Just as a bonus here, Spencer Arrighetti is someone who, if you look at his second half last season, he was electric, man. If you just do a K-minus walk leaderboard of the second half, he was like a top 20 pitcher in baseball. I know the first half was ugly, but young pitcher. I remember I identified him early last year, even when he had like a 7 ERA, because his K-minus walk looked really good. And we know for pitchers, that's like you can get 75% of the way there just by looking at K-minus walk. And I'm like, this guy's interesting because he's putting up these numbers. His ERA isn't matching. Sure enough, he turned it around and put together a great second half. So there's also a great article that I saw on Fangraphs. It was an interview with, I believe it was David Lorela. I hope I'm saying that correctly. But he had interviewed Arrighetti, and Arrighetti seems just like a pitching nerd. Like he's a guy who's in the weeds with analytics and, you know, trying to find every way to get better. And, you know, listen, I don't want him to go overboard. Like the guy's just, he has a lot of natural talent, so don't like screw around too much. But I always like to see guys that are really, they just really want to work on their craft. And I think Arrighetti is one of those guys. So both Spencers, I think, and Arrighetti's going way later than Schwellenbach. Arrighetti's going around pick 200, and I'll take that price all day. And last one I'll give you for a reliever is Yoan Duran. Someone who we know struggled beginning last year. He had started off on the wrong foot. On the wrong oblique, rather, and missed some time. And I think just never really got into shape until the end of the season. And even when he did, the numbers didn't look great. But if you look under the hood, he was just very, very unlucky with, you know, batting average of balls in play. Like the skills that he showed at the end of the season were actually the best of his career. And I've seen reports already about how good he looks in spring. And yeah, he's just a guy that I think he's not quite going in that elite tier of closers, but I think he has the skills to be like, I don't think I could see him being like the Emmanuel Clase next year, right? A guy that similar skills, really, right? More strikeouts, but just a guy who just throws really hard, gets a lot of ground balls. And I think he's a guy who could be the closer one, and you're getting him in like the fifth round. So I'm good with Yoan Duran this year, and I love him. I love him. All right. We're going up against it here, but we're going to slip in one listener question. What we'll do, we'll kind of spread these out, guys, because I think these questions are kind of – they're good, like general questions. So we'll do one today, and maybe we'll do one or two next week. Mm-hmm. All right. So one of them, and this is from Sweaty Ray. Man, I love that name. Sweaty Ray. We had asked people to send us questions, you know, as they're getting ready for their drafts, and we got some good ones. So we'll go with Mr. Sweaty first. His question is second base really the desolate wasteland it appears to be? So let me toss it to hopefully non-sweaty Mike.
I'm not sweating currently.
That is nice. I mean, it's too cold for that. But what are your thoughts? Second base as a whole, what are your thoughts on the position? We've already talked about some, actually, right?
Right.
With Holiday and Westberg. Do you think it's a desolate wasteland, or do you think there's more than Mr. Ray is seen in the second base pool?
No, I think there's a lot to be said about. I don't think it's a desolate wasteland at all, Ray. And I think that depending on how you kind of view the position and how you attack your draft, I think there's a number of different ways to kind of go at looking at this position. There's certain guys that I'm not as high on as other people are. Jose Altuve, Ozzie Albies, Matt McClain, the injury worries me, Bryce Terang, you know, he's a pure steals guy. But, you know, if I can come away from my drafts with, you know, a Luis Renjifo or Andres Jimenez as my starter, I'm probably going to be getting my middle infielder as a shortstop as kind of my, the way that things have been kind of working out for me. I'm kind of looking more in that Dansby Swanson range for my middle infield guy. And so I don't think it's a barren wasteland. I mean, obviously the deeper the league, the more concerned you're going to be. But if you could take an, say for example, a guy like Luis Renjifo and pair him with Jackson Holliday, or, you know, Willie Castro or somebody like that, you're going to be pretty good at the position.
Okay. Dave, I know you were kind of under the weather earlier this week, so I assume you're sweaty-ish. I'll call you sweaty-ish, Dave. What do you think about second base? Is it a desolate wasteland, or are you in agreement with Mike that there's some opportunity there?
Yeah, I'm a little sweaty, but that's... it's neither here nor there. I do actually like second base as it goes on, but you're not going to get a lot of power. So other than Brandon Lau late in drafts, I wouldn't be looking for power, but you can find some good sources of speed. You're going to get Nico Horner or Michael Garcia or maybe even Zach Gelof after pick 200. So if you need some speed, those are starters who are going to get you some stolen bases. It's a weird position in the sense that like the elite of the elite aren't really that elite, but they're solid in the sense that they're going to play and they'll contribute at different parts of your team. So it's very dependent on what you need and where you actually take it. And it's a very important piece of your draft because depending on what you need and when you take it, it'll help you later on figure out, okay, maybe I don't need this guy, or maybe I don't need to take a second baseman. I can wait for some speed later. Mm-hmm. So there are a lot of options later, but they're really tailored to the needs of your team while you're drafting.
Yeah. Like you said, I think there are so many of these guys who are going to give you speed, whether it's Jimenez, Terang, Stott, blanking on others, but there's quite a bit of speed at that position. And I think you just have to be cognizant if you are going for, say, Brandon, you're going to wait and say, I want 25 home run potential at second base and get Brandon Lau, for example. That's fine, but you just have to have a plan for that before and make sure that you're compensating for the speed that you won't be getting that others will from that position. So I think that's just a thing to consider. But yeah.
You can't wait on second base and need power. That those two don't go hand in hand. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm.
All right, we will leave it there. We're going to transition away from our baseball talk, and for our last segment we will be doing our mental health minute. So Mike, start us off. What are you doing these days to maintain either, could be both your physical and or mental wellness?
Well, you know, the struggle is real. and it's the middle of February, and it's been a brutal month of health issues here and, you know, just trying to get through winter and get to these drafts that are coming up. I got Glarf this weekend up in Detroit. Looking forward to that. That's going to be
you're
a good time.
Rush that league, man. I'm telling you.
Oh, like, I don't know.
This is your year. I know.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. What I've been trying to do, speaking of crushing things, I've been trying to avoid catastrophizing. You know, we have a tendency, Chris, you know this better than just about anyone because of the fact that you're a therapist. We have a tendency to really kind of have cognitive distortions, and mine get worse in the wintertime, you know, just because I've been kind of shut in. I haven't been able to be outside as much as I would like and do things outside. So I'm really kind of trying to work on being mindfully aware that I have these cognitive distortions and that I'm not helpless to change them and that I'm not going to spend a lot of time ruminating on that. And what I've been trying to do is consider all the outcomes of certain events and things that are happening, right? So like you're talking about the Glarf draft, you know, it could go really well. It could be a very positive thing. Most likely it'll probably be more neutral because I'll probably make some terrible picks that you guys will remind me about and it won't go as well. And then mildly negative predictions like finishing last, which I've actually done before, you know, so trying to stay away from that and consider all the possible outcomes and be mindfully aware and make that distinction. Hey, at the end of the day, I'm at a fantasy baseball draft with my friends. I'm going to have some bad snacks. I'm going to have a couple of beers. Maybe I'll even have a cigar. I'm going to have fun and just kind of keep it at that and remind myself of those things on a daily basis.
Love it, Mike. Yeah. Paying attention to your thoughts and, you know, just having that awareness, number one, of that dialogue that's going on. We've talked about it on here before and making sure that it's not, you know, being extreme one way or the other. Just kind of keeping in that middle ground. So love it. Dave, what about you, man? I know you haven't been feeling great. You've got kids that aren't feeling great. I was there a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
Not fun. How are you keeping your head on straight right now?
Well, other than all of that happening, big news here is that I know I put it on Twitter, but my mom came home from her surgery and all of that. So after 3 or 4 months of being away, she's back. So honestly, I'm trying to just spend as much time as I can with my mom, enjoy time with her. Being a parent myself, you know, you see your kids grow up and you blink and then they're old and it's just, where did the time go? So I just want to make sure, you know, while she's here, I can enjoy her, enjoy time. Even if I'm just getting lectured, I'm still enjoying time with her. And yeah, no, it's good to see her back. And yeah, it's helped a lot here. So
that's awesome.
That's awesome, man. Really happy for you. And that's great news. So
thanks.
All right. So for me, I think, man, it's been a long winter. Everybody in my house has been sick, including me. And it's dragging. Like, we're reaching that point in winter where it's just cold every day. You know, not, like, I want to get sun, but it's just too damn cold out there. So it's been a little bit of a struggle. But what I think I've been doing well lately, I'll give myself credit, is like, yeah, like everybody else, I'll have my bad moments, you know, bad hours, bad days. But what I've been doing a better job of is just reminding myself, like, this is just a phase. It's just temporary. And, you know, I use the analogy of just riding the wave, man. Like, life is just like the waves go up and down. Sometimes it's smooth sailing and sometimes you're riding a big one and you just kind of have to ride it out. And I think that's just been something that I've been more aware of and have been doing a pretty decent job, not letting a bad, you know, afternoon turn into, you know, a bad night too, or, you know, a bad 2 days, like just kind of right. Like, okay, you know, like not making any decisions that are going to make it worse. Right. And just kind of like reminding myself it's going to pass. Mm-hmm. Right. And with so many things in life, when we apply that idea, it's an old adage and, you know, people may get tired of hearing it, but like the idea of this too shall pass, there is a lot of, I think, utility to that. So that is my mental health minute, but we are going to leave it there for today. Next week, we will be back with another episode. We're going to get into a nice routine here. We're going to be recording on Thursday nights every week and hopefully get you that episode every Saturday morning. We're going to make it like, you know, when you were a kid, at least when I was a kid, Saturday morning cartoons. That was like your thing, right? Woke up, you had your shows that you watched, and kids don't have that anymore, right? Which sucks. But, you know, we're going to become part of your Saturday morning routine, or at least we hope to. So whatever you're doing, you're out driving your kids somewhere or whatever, mowing the grass in the summer, like we want to be part of that routine with you. So we'll get into a nice flow here. But for next week, we've got Nathan Grimm of Baseball Perspectives, my good friend, and really looking forward to having him on with us. We'll be talking about some of his recent work and this everything as we get ready for these big drafts here. So we'll try to cover a lot of things next week. And yeah, we would appreciate if you like the show. We've been getting a lot of new listeners lately. Last week was our most listened to episode again. So we keep growing, and we would appreciate anybody who does like the show. Even if you don't like the show, give us feedback, you know, or wherever you get your podcasts, would appreciate that. And yeah, we will leave it there for today. Thank you so much for listening. For Dave Funnel, for Mike Carter, I'm Chris Torres. You've been listening to the Fantasy Baseball Beat.